If any of his friends try to help him, we can give them our spears."
This was no more than they wished themselves. When both sides were there in force, Trojans and Lycians, against Myrmidons and Achaeans, they joined battle with terrible shouts, and how their weapons crashed and smashed. Then Zeus drew a dreadful darkness over the conflict, that the battle for his son might be dreadful and desperate. At first the Trojans drove back their enemies, for a man was struck down who was by no means the least among the Myrmidons, Epigeus, the son of Prince Agacles. Epigeus had once been ruler of Budaeon, but he had killed one of his cousins and took revenge with Peleus and Thetis Silverfoot. They sent him to war at Ilius along with Achilles. He was taking hold of the dead man when Hector smashed skull and helmet with a large stone. He fell dead over the body. Then Patroclus, provoked by his comrade's loss, rushed at him straight like a hawk scattering daws and starlings. "That was a fine pounce of yours, Patroclus, my leader of chivalry, straight for Lycians and Trojans to avenge your comrade's death." He struck Sthenelaus on the neck with a stone and tore the sinews out. Then Hector in the front rank fell back as far as a man casts a long goat spear in practice or in games, or in war when he faces murderous foemen. And so far the Achaeans pushed forward. Glaucus first wheeled about and killed Bathycles, Chalcon's son, who lived in Hellas, a man notable among the Myrmidons for riches and wealth. Bathycles nearly caught him, but Glaucus turned suddenly and stabbed him in the chest. The Achaeans were infuriated at the fall of so good a man. The Trojans were glad and rallied round the body, but the Achaeans came on unshrinking. Then Meriones got another Trojan, the brave soldier Laogonus, a son of Onetor, who was priest of Idaean Zeus and highly honored. He struck him under jaw and ear. The spirit of life quickly left him, and darkness covered him up. Then Aeneas let fly his spear against Meriones in the hope to hit him as he advanced under his shield. But he kept a steady eye and stooped forwards, avoiding the spear, which dumped into the ground behind. There it stood with quivering butt until Ares took its fierceness away. Aeneas was furious and called out, "Meriones, you do know how to dance, but my spear might have stopped your dancing for good and all if it had only hit you." Meriones answered, "Aeneas, you do know how to fight, but you are a mortal man, after all, and you will not find it easy to kill every man alive who defends himself. I might hit you myself, and then where would your strong hands be? You would give the victory to me and your soul to Hades." Patroclus rated him for this. "My good man, why do you bandy words like this? You are wasting time. Taunts and jibes will not drive the Trojans away from the dead body. Many a man will fall before that. Words are potent in debate. Deeds in war decide your fate. Then don't go on piling up words, but fight." So Patroclus hurried him off to the thick of the action. And the noise rose far and wide, thudding and thumping of swords and spears on metal and leather, on shields and bucklers, as the thuds of the axes are heard afar when workmen fell the trees in the mountain forests. Now not even a man who knew him well could have known the noble Sarpedon, smothered from head to foot in blood and dust and showers of shafts. The crowds of men struggled about the body like a swarm of flies buzzing about a farmyard in springtime, when the milk runs over the pails and the bowls are doused with milk. And all the while Zeus did not turn away his eyes from the battle, but gazed at them, musing in his mind on Patroclus and his bloody deaths. Should Hector kill him there over Sarpedon's body and strip him of his armor, or should he add yet more to the number of the dead? At last he thought it best that Patroclus should kill yet more and drive Hector back to the city walls. So first he made Hector's courage fail. Hector entered his car and turned to retreat, calling on the Trojans to follow. He knew the sacred scales of Zeus. Then not even the brave Lycians stood firm, but all fled away. Now they had seen their king lying pierced through the heart in the heap of corpses, for many had fallen over him at the time when Cronion tightened the strife. But the others tore the shining armor from his shoulders, and Patroclus sent it away to the camp. Then Zeus, cloud-gatherer, said to Apollo, "Make haste now, my dear Phoebus. Take Sarpedon out of range and cleanse him of the black blood. Carry him far away and wash him in the river. Anoint him with ambrosia and clothe him in raiment incorruptible. Then give him to those two swift carriers sleep and death, and they shall quickly set him down in the happy land of Lycia, where friends and kinsmen shall do the last rites with barrow and pillar, for that is the honour due to the dead." Apollo did not neglect his father's bidding. He went down from Ida into the battlefield. He carried the body of Sarpedon out of range and took it far away and washed it in the river. He anointed it with ambrosia and clothed it in raiment incorruptible. Then he gave it to the two swift carriers, Sleep and Death, who quickly set it down in the happy land of Lycia. Now Patroclus ordered Automedon to drive him after the Trojans and Lycians. Poor fool! He was quite blinded. If he had done as Achilles told him, he could have escaped Black Death. But always the will of Zeus is stronger than man, and Zeus put that temper into his heart. "Who was the first, who was the last you killed, Patroclus, now the gods had summoned you to death? First Adrestos and Autonous and Echeclos, Perimos Megades and Epistor and Melanippus, then Elisus and Mulius and Pilates, all these he killed. And the others were glad to escape. And then the Achaeans would have taken the proud city of Troy by the valour of Patroclus, for he went onwards like a storm, but Apollo stood on the wall to help the Trojans, intent upon his death. 3 times did Patroclus set his foot on a corner of the wall. 3 times Apollo duelled him back, wrapping the shield with his immortal hands. When he tried the 4th time, like one more than man, Apollo shouted at him and said in plain words, 'Back, Prince Patroclus! It is not fated that proud Troy shall fall to your spear, nor to Achilles, who is a much better man than you.' Then Patroclus fell back a long way in fear of the wrath of Apollo shoot afar. But Hector checked his horses at the Scaean gates, for he was in doubt whether to drive into battle again or recall his army to take shelter within the walls. As he was considering, Apollo appeared by his side in the form of a lusty young fellow Asius, who was Hector's own uncle, being brother of Hecabe and son of Dymas, who lived near the Sangarius in Phrygia. Apollo said then in the shape of this man, "Why have you left the battle, Hector? You ought not to do it. I wish I were as much better than you as I am worse. You should soon be sorry you shirked. Hurry, make for Patroclus, and you may get him. Apollo may give you victory." As Apollo disappeared into the melee, Hector told Cebriones to whip the horses into battle. Apollo turned the Argives to flight and made the Trojans prevail, but Hector left the others alone and drove towards Patroclus. Then Patroclus leapt out of his car, holding the spear in his left hand. He picked up with his right a sharp, shining stone, just large enough to fill his hand. He did not try to keep clear of the fellow now. He threw with all his might, and his shot was not wasted, for it hit Cebriones, himself a bastard son of Priam, on the forehead as he held the reins. The stone crushed both brows into one and smashed the bone, and both eyes fell down in the dust in front of him. He rolled out of the car like a tumbler, and Patroclus said in mockery, "Bless my soul, there's a spring heel. What a neat header he takes. If he were at sea, he could fill many hungry bellies by diving for sea urchins. He would jump overboard in any weather to judge from that excellent dive over car on land. I didn't know there were divers in Troy." He pounced on Cebriones like a lion which ravages the fold, until he has run through the chest, and his own courage is his destruction. "Ah, Patroclus, that was what came of your leap." And Hector leapt from his car to meet him, and there they fought as 2 lions fight over a deer's body, both hungry, both furious. There Patroclus Menoetiades and glorious Hector were ready to tear each other to pieces. Hector laid hold of the head and would not let go. Patroclus held fast by the foot, and the 2 armies behind them were fighting too. It was like the struggle of east wind and south wind to shake the trees in a mountain dimble, oak and ash and smooth-barked kernel. How they beat the long boughs together with a rare great noise! What a crashing of cracking trunks! So Trojans and Danians dashed together, dealing death, and neither thought of retreat. Round the body of Cebriones the sharp spears fell thick, the winged arrows flew from the string, showers of big stones battered the shields of the fighting men, and the dead man, amid the whirlwind of dust, lay grand in his own grandeur, forgetful of his horsemanship. So long as the sun bestrode the middle sky, those death-dealing showers went on from this side and that. But when the sun took his turn to Oxlusing time, the Achaeans became stronger beyond measure. They dragged away the body of Cebriones and stripped his armor, and Patroclus turned upon the Trojans again. Thrice he leapt on them like another god of war with awful shouts. Thrice 9 men he killed. But at the fourth, furious attack. Ah, then, Patroclus, the end of your life was in sight, for Phoebus was there in all his terrors. Patroclus did not see him coming, for the god was hidden in mist. He stood behind Patroclus. His eyes rolled in rage, and he slapped him between the shoulders with the flat of the hand. The helmet was knocked from his head and went rolling and rattling under the horse's feet. The plumes were dabbled in blood and dust. Never before had it been God's will that this plumed helmet should be fouled in the dust when it covered the head and brows of a man of the blood divine, Achilles. Then Zeus granted that Hector should wear it. Yet death was coming near him. Patroclus felt the spear in his hand broken to pieces. The great, strong, heavy-bladed spear, the tasseled shield with its belt fell from his shoulders. The corslet was stripped off his body by the great son of Zeus. His mind was blinded, his knees crickled under him. He stood there, dazed. Then from behind a spear hit him between the shoulders. A Dardanian struck him, Euphorbus Panthoides, best of all his years-mates in spearmanship and horsemanship and fleetness of foot. He had already dismounted 20 since he drove out to learn his first lesson of war. His was the first blow, but it did not bring down Patroclus, and Euphorbus pulled out the spear and mixed again with the crowd. He could not stand up to Patroclus, even when naked and bare. But the god's blow and the spear together were too much for Patroclus, and he sought safety among his friends. When Hector saw him retreating and wounded, he came near and stabbed him in the belly. The blade ran through. He fell with a dull thud, and consternation took the Achaeans. So fell Patroclus, like a wild boar killed by a lion, when both are angry and both are parched with thirst, and they fight over a little mountain pool until the lion is too strong for the panting boar. Patroclus Menoetiades had killed many men, but Hector Priamides killed him. And then he vaunted his victory without disguise. "So, Patroclus, you thought that you could sack our city. You thought you would rob our women of the day of freedom and carry them off to your own country. Fool! In front of them are the horses of Hector, prancing out to battle. My spear is well known among my brave Trojans, for I defend them from the day of fate. Here you shall stay and feed the vultures. Ah, poor wretch, your Achilles is a good man, but he was no help to you, although no doubt he warned you earnestly when you started, and he stayed behind. Don't come back to me, my brave Patroclus, until you have stripped the blood-stained shirt from Hector's body. No doubt he must have said that, and you thought you could do it. No more sense in you than that.
Patroclus replied, half-fainting, "For this once, Hector, make your proud boast, for you are the victor by help of Zeus Cronides and Apollo, who mastered me. An easy thing, they stripped off my armor themselves. But if 20 men like you had confronted me, my spear would have slain them all on the spot. No, it was cruel fate that killed me, and Leto's son, and of men Euphorbus. You come third and take my armor. One thing I tell you, and you should lay it up in your mind. You have yourself not long to live. Already death and fate are beside you, and Achilles Iasides shall lay you low."
Even as he spoke, the shadow of death covered him up. His soul left the body and went down to Hades, bewailing his lot cut off in his manhood and strength.
But Hector answered him, though dead, "What is this prophecy of certain death to me, Patroclus? Achilles may be the son of divine Thetis, but who knows if I may not strike him with my spear, and he may be the first to die."
Then he set one foot upon the body, and treading it away from the spear, pulled out the spear, and went at once with the spear after the driver Automedon. He wanted to kill him too, but the immortal horses which the gods had given to Peleus were carrying him out of the way. Book 17. How They Fought Over the Body of Patroclus. Menelaus had not failed to mark the death of Patroclus. He came up at once and bestrode the body like a cow standing over her calf, the first she ever bore, with plaintive lowing. He held spear leveled and shield before him, ready to kill anyone who should attack. Euphorbus also was not indifferent to the hero's fall. He presented himself before Menelaus and said, "Go back, my lord king Menelaus, go back, leave the body, leave the spoils. I was first to strike him. Not a man of Trojans or allies comes before me. Then leave me my triumph, or I will kill you, and life is sweet." Menelaus cried out in hot anger, "Father Zeus, how ugly is a vainglorious boast! There's not as much pride in a panther, or a lion, or a wild boar, and a boar's the most blustering swaggerer on earth, as there is in these sons of Panthous with their ashwood poles. Hyperenor was a strong man, but he had small joy of his strength when he made light of me and stood up to me and thought I was one to be despised. I don't think he walked home on his own feet to make his wife and parents happy. I fancy I'll quench your pride, too, if you stand up to me. I advise you to go away and hide yourself. You had better not come near me, or you'll be sorry for it. When a thing is done and past, even fools are wise at last." Euphorbus did not care. What he said was, "Now indeed, my lord Menelaus, you shall pay in full for my brother whom you killed. And here you are boasting how you made his wife a widow in her new bridal chamber, and brought mourning and lamentation upon his parents. I might console those unhappy creatures if I could bring your head and your armor, and lay them in the hands of Panthous and Lady Frontis. But it shall not be long before we put our quarrel to the test of life or death." With that he struck a blow on the shield. The point bent and did not go through. But Menelaus, with a prayer to Father Zeus, lunged, and as the man stepped back, struck him on the root of the throat, putting his weight into the blow. The blade cut through, and he fell with a dull thud in his rattling armor. That hair, lovely as the Graces, those tresses, tight-pinched with gold and silver wire, were drenched with blood. He lay like a tall stem of olive, which a man keeps in a private garden where plenty of water flows, growing fair and high. It sways in the breath of all the breezes, heavy with the white flowers, until suddenly a storm wind roots it out of the trench and lays it along the ground. And so lay he when Menelaus had killed him and stripped his armor. When a mountain-bred lion, proud in his strength, ravishes the best cow from a grazing herd, he takes the neck in his strong teeth and breaks it, then gulps down blood and bowels, tearing savagely. Dogs and herdsmen hoot loudly from a distance and dare not come near, for they are all afraid. Just so, none of those men dared to come near Menelaus. Then he would have carried off the spoils without trouble, but Phoebus Apollo grudged it to him. So the god took the shape of Mentes the Ciconian and spoke to Hector in plain words. "Hector, you are chasing what you will never catch when you run like this after the horses of Achilles. It is not easy for a mortal man to master them and drive them. That is only for Achilles, whose mother is herself an immortal. Meanwhile, King Menelaus has been defending Patroclus, and he has killed your best man, Euphorbus Panthoides." Then he went back into the melee. Hector looked round angrily and saw them at once, the body lying on the ground with blood flowing from the wound, and Menelaus stripping off the armor. He shouted and hastened towards them like a flame of fire. Menelaus heard the shout and said to himself, "What shall I do? If I leave the spoils and if I leave Patroclus, who lies here for my sake, not a Danaan but will hate the sight of me. If I stand and fight Hector and the Trojan army alone to save my honor, I shall be surrounded, for here comes Hector with all his army. No, no, all that is nonsense. When one fights a fellow that finds favor in the sight of God, he simply tempts providence and brings tribulation rolling upon himself. Then no Danaan will hate the sight of me if he sees me retreat before Hector, because Hector has heaven to help him. But if I could hear anything of that redoubtable man Aias, we might even tempt providence a bit and strike a blow to save this dead man for Achilles Pelides. That would be the best choice of evils." While he was deliberating, Hector and his Trojans had come near. Menelaus left the body and retreated, turning again and again, like a bearded lion chased from the farmyard by dogs and men with shouting and spears. His stout heart freezes within him, and sorely against his will he leaves that farm. So in a slow, reluctant pace, Menelaus went on until he found his people. Then he faced about and looked everywhere for Telamonian Aeas. He soon saw him on the left of the battle, rallying the men who were in mortal fear of Phoebus Apollo. He went off at a run and soon reached him and said, "Aeas, this way! Don't waste time! Hurry up for Patroclus! He's dead, but we may bring back the body to Achilles. The armor is lost. Hector has it." This did arouse Aeas. He and Menelaus together made their way through the press. Hector had taken the armor, and now he was dragging away the body, intending to cut off the head and throw the body among the carrion dogs. But now comes Aeas behind that great shield like a stone wall. Hector retreated and leapt into his car. He gave the armor to be carried back to the city and to be his chief pride. Aeas now covered the body with his broad shield. He stood as a lion stands over his young when huntsmen meet him leading his cubs through the woods. With a defiant swagger, he draws down the eyelids to hide his eyes. So stood Aeas with his legs across the body of Patroclus. By his side was Menelaus, ever more and more anxious. Now Glaucus, with a frown, reproached Hector for his delay. "You are handsome enough, Hector, but there is a good deal lacking in you as a soldier. You have a great name for nothing. You are a regular shake-leg. You had better consider now how you and your people alone are going to save Ilios. Not one of the Lycians, at least, will fight for you, since we get no thanks, it seems, for these everlasting battles. How are you likely to save an ordinary man when you deserted Sarpedon in this heartless way? And he was your friend and comrade, and you left him to be the Argives' prey and plaything. He did good work for you and your city while he lived, and now you have not the pluck to save him from the dogs. If any Lycians will listen to me, it's homeward we will go, and that means certain destruction for Troy. For if the Trojans had now real, bold, undaunted courage, such as men feel when they fight for home and country, we should very soon drag Patroclus into Ilios. If we could drag him away and get him into the city dead, the Argives would very soon release the armor of Sarpedon, and we should bring him, too, into Ilios. For the master of Patroclus is one who is chief champion of the Argives, he and his men. But you would not stand up to Aeas and look in your enemy's eyes, or fight it out with him, for he is a better man than you." Hector looked angrily at him and said, "How could a man like you, Glaucus, say such an outrageous thing? Damn it all, I thought you were the most sensible man in Lycia. I don't think much of your sense now when you say such a thing. I would not stand up to that monster Aeas, so you say. Battles and trampling horses don't make me shiver, but the will of Zeus Almighty must always prevail. And he can make the strongest man take to his heels, and robs him of victory easily, or again he sends him forward to the fight. Pray, come this way, sluggard, stand by my side and see my work. See whether I shall be a coward all day long, as you declare, or if I shall stop the fighting of a Danaan or two, however fierce they may be over dead Patroclus." With this he called to the Trojans at the top of his voice. "Trojans, Lycians, my brave Dardanians, be men, my friends, don't forget your duty. Fight your hardest until I put on the armor of Achilles, which I have torn off the back of Patroclus after I killed him." He hurried away out of the battle and ran as fast as he could to the men who were carrying the armor. They were not far away, and he ran like the wind. There, behind the battle, he stood and changed. He gave his own gear to the carriers and put on the incorruptible armor of Achilles Pelides, which the heavenly ones had given to his father and his father had given to him in old age. But the son never grew old in his father's armor. When Zeus Cloud-Gatherer saw him behind the battle, arming himself in the gear of Pelides, he shook his head and said to himself, "Ah, poor creature, you have no thought of death in your mind, and death is very near. You don the incorruptible armor of a mighty champion whom others do tremble at. His comrade you have slain, that man so gentle and so strong, and torn his armor brutally from head and shoulders. Yet I will put great strength into your hands to set off against this, that you shall never return out of this battle, or give to Andromache the famous armor of Pelion." Over these words he bowed with his black brows. But he made the armor fit the body of Hector, and the dreadful spirit of war entered into him and filled every limb with power and strength. He came back to his allies shouting. There they all saw him shining in the armor of the great Achilles. Then he appealed to each in turn, Mestles and Glaucus, Medon and Thersilochus, Asteropaeus and Dicenor and Hippothous, Phorcys and Chromios, and Enomus the bird diviner, and said plainly, without wasting words, "Hear me now, you thousand tribes of my allies from the country round about. I did not want numbers, and I was not looking for numbers when I sent round to your cities to invite you here. What I wished was that you of your own generous hearts might save the women and children of Troy from the Achaean invaders. That is my thought when I exhaust my people with supplies and food for you and try to content you all. Then let each man turn straight to the front. Come death, come life. That's how war and battle kiss and prattle. The man who succeeds in driving back Aeus and gets Patroclus into Troy, dead as he is, half of the spoils I will allot him, and keep half myself. He shall have as much pride as I have." Straight for the Danians in a heavy mass they marched, with spears at the ready. They expected soon to drag away the corpse from Aeus Telaminiades. Fools! He killed many of them over that corpse. At last Aeus was convinced, and said to his companion, "We are wasting time, my dear prince. I cannot believe any longer that we shall get safely out of this by our two selves. I am not so much worried about this dead corpse of Patroclus, which will soon be a good supper for dogs and vultures, as I am worried about my own live head, which may come to grief, and for yours, too, when I see battle all round us like a cloud, Hector himself and certain death once more manifest for us. Look sharp. Call some of our good men if you can make one here." Menelaus shouted for help loud and clear, "Friends, captains and princes, you guests of our royal house who drink free at the board of Agamemnon and Menelaus, captains in high command, but Zeus gives rank and honor still to every creature at his will. I really can't make out where they all are. There is such a blaze of battle hereabouts. But do come, if I don't mention your names. Come, everybody. You ought to be ashamed to let Patroclus be just a toy for dogs to play about with." Aeus the runner heard him clearly enough and came running up first, then Idomeneus and his formidable retainer Meriones. But who could ever remember the names of all who came after these to reinforce the fighting? Then the Trojans rushed on in a mass, roaring and shouting like a great wave roaring against the swollen stream at a river's mouth, when the foam flies high and the headlands boom. The Achaeans stood firm and determined round the body, fenced by their metal-plated shields. Cronion also covered their shining helmets in a thick cloud. He had no feeling against Menetiades when he was alive, and when dead he hated to let him be mauled about by Trojan dogs, and so he helped the defenders. At first the Trojans pushed the Achaeans back, and they left the body. The Trojans hurt none of them in the retreat, as they would have liked to do, but they began to drag the body away. But the Achaeans were not likely to be long in rallying when Aeus was there. Aeus, the finest man and the strongest man in the army after Achilles. He soon swung them round again and charged like a wild boar twisting about in the woods, which easily scatters huntsmen and dogs and all. So Aeus scattered the Trojans who were crowding about Patroclus, determined to drag him away and cover themselves with glory. Now Hippothous, the son of Pelasgian Lethos, had tied up the ankles of Patroclus with his sword belt, hoping to gain credit with Hector. He was dragging the body away when a blow fell on him irresistible. Aeus was upon him and drove the great spear crashing through his helmet, and the brains ran out along the socket. The man dropped the foot of Patroclus and let it lie as he fell prone over the corpse, far from fertile Laris. Few and short had his days been when Aeus laid him low, and he never paid to his parents the debt of a grateful son. Then Hector cast a lance at Aeus, but Aeus was watching his eye and dodged a little aside. The blade hit Schedius and ran under his collarbone and stuck out of the shoulder, bringing him down with a bang and a clang in his armor. Scyrius was the son of Iphitos, and the best man among the Phocians. He came from Panopeus, where he was king. Phorcys, Phenops' son, now straddled across Hippothous, but Aeus stabbed him right in the belly. The blade pierced the corselet plate, and his bowels gushed out. He fell in the dust, clutching at the earth. Then Hector and his front men fell back, and the Achaeans, with shouts of triumph, dragged away the bodies of Phorcys and Hippothous and stripped off their armor. And now the Trojans would have lost heart. They would have been driven behind the walls of their city, and the Achaeans would have prevailed by their own strength and courage, even against the decree of Zeus. But Apollo made Aeneas take part. He assumed the shape of the herald Periphas Epitides, a faithful old servant of the family, and said, "Aeneas, I wonder how you could defend Ilius if a god were against you. Why, I have seen other men who trusted in their numbers and the strength of their manhood and kept their realm even against Zeus. But in our case, Zeus wishes victory for us rather than for the Danians. Yet you all run away forever and will not fight." Aeneas knew Apollo Shudafar at a glance, and called out to Hector, "Hector, and your other captains, Trojans and allies, this is really a disgrace if we are to be driven into the city like beaten cowards. But one of the gods has just come and told me that Zeus, the god of battles, is still on our side. Then let us have at the enemy. Don't suffer him tamely to rescue the body of Patroclus dead." Then he dashed through the front ranks and stood before them. The others wheeled about and faced the Achaeans. Aeneas struck down a man, Leocritus, Arisba's son, the trusty comrade of Lycomedes. Then Lycomedes came up to the body and cast his spear. The blade struck Apisaon Hippasides in the liver, and he collapsed. This man came from Paeonia, and he was their best man after Asteropaeus. Then Asteropaeus rushed forward at once to avenge his friend, but he could do nothing. The shields all stood like a fence about Patroclus, and the spears stuck out. Aeus was everywhere, keeping the men in hand. He would not let anyone move back or go out in front, but made them stand close round the body and lunge when they could. Such were the tactics of that prodigious man. The ground was red with blood. Men were falling one after another among the assailants, and the Danians too, for they did not fight without bloodshed, although they lost fewer men because they were careful to keep together and defend one another. As they fought in this fiery conflict, you could not suppose there was either sun or moon in the sky, for a thick cloud covered all the place where the fighting men stood about the body of Patroclus. But the rest of the two armies fought at their ease in the open air. The sharp, clear sunlight spread everywhere, and not a cloud was to be seen on earth or mountains. All these fought with pauses for rest, avoiding the shots which came from either side, with plenty of room between. But the group in the middle had a hard struggle against both cloud and battle, and even the best of them were worn out with their efforts. But two men, Thrasymedes and Antilochus, had not yet heard that Patroclus was dead. They thought he was up at the front and still fighting. They were in a place apart where Nestor had sent them, watching the carnage and rout of their people. All day long there were hard times for those who were fighting round the body of Patroclus. Their desperate struggle covered them with sweat, knees and legs and feet, hands and eyes. They tugged and pulled at the dead body, like a party of men who have to stretch an oxhide soaking with grease and pull away standing in a ring till the natural moisture runs out and the grease runs in. The hide is well stretched with all those men pulling. So they pulled that body against one another in the narrow space, the Trojans towards Troy and the Achaeans toward the ships. That was a savage maul. Neither Ares nor Athena would have thought it something too small to glut their anger. See what a bitter struggle of men and horses Zeus kept on the stretch about Patroclus. But Achilles did not know yet, as it seems, that Patroclus was dead, for the battle was far away from the ships, under the walls of Troy. Achilles never expected that he was killed. He thought that if he got as far as the gates he would return alive, for he never expected at all that Patroclus would take the city without him, nor with him, indeed. So much he had often been told by his mother when she spoke privately of the will of Zeus. Certainly his mother told him nothing of all the misfortune which had now come about. and how the dearest of all his companions had been killed. So they went on without ceasing to grapple with one another in deadly strife over the body, and you might have heard the Achaeans saying, "Ah, my good friends, there is no doubt we could retreat with honor and let the Trojans drag away this man in triumph. May the black earth swallow us first, that would be better." And the Trojans would say, "Ah, my friends, not a man must give way, not if we are all doomed to die together over this body." So they encouraged one another, and so they fought, while the iron din resounded through the unvintaged air to the brazen sky. But behind the battle, the horses of Achilles had been weeping, ever since they heard that their driver was low in the dust, struck down by Hector's blood-stained spear. What could Automedon do? Often he touched them with a quick lash, often he cursed, and often he coaxed. But go they would not, neither back to the sea nor forward to battle. They stood with the car steady behind them, moving no more than a stone pillar on a tomb. They drooped their heads till they touched the ground. Hot tears ran from their eyes and fell, as they mourned the driver whom they had loved and lost. Their thick manes hung from the yoke-pad over both sides of the yoke. Cronion was grieved as he saw their mourning, and shaking his head he said to himself, "Ah, poor things, why did we give you to a mortal man like Peleus, when you are immortal and never grow old, to share the sorrows of miserable mankind? For I think there is no more unhappy thing than man, of all creatures that breathe and move on the earth. Nevertheless, you and your splendid chariot shall never be driven by Hector Priamides. That I will not suffer. Is it not enough that he has the arms and utters vainglorious boasts? You shall have strength from me in your knees and your spirit. You shall bring Automedon to the ships and save him from the battle, for I will still give them victory, and they shall slay until they reach the ships. Then the sun shall go down and sacred night shall come." Then he breathed courage into the horses. They shook the dust from their manes and brought their car swiftly to the battlefield. Automedon swooped as a vulture on the geese, fighting for all his sorrow. Lightly he charged into the thick of the throng. Lightly he left pursuing Trojans behind. But he killed no creature whom he pursued. For alone in that sacred chariot he could not both hold the swift horses and attack with the spear. At last a friend saw him, Alcimedon, son of Laerces, Haemon's son. He stopped behind the car and called out, "Automedon, has some god robbed you of your good sense and put this useless notion into your head? There you go, out in front, fighting the Trojans alone, but your comrade is dead. Hector himself has the armor of Viasides on his back, and mighty proud he is." Automedon answered, "Alcimedon, you're the man for me. There's no one else in the whole army who can manage these fiery horses, only Patroclus, that heaven-born genius, while he was alive. But now he is dead and gone. Come on, take whip and reins. I'll get out and fight." He leapt out as he spoke. Alcimedon got into the welcome car and took over whip and reins. This Hector saw and called out, "Aeneas, my standby, I have just seen those two horses of Achilles suddenly appear in the battle, and drivers who are no good. I could take them, I hope, if you'll help. I don't think they would dare to stand up to you and me." Aeneas was ready, and they advanced together under their trusty shields, good oxide with a thick facing of metal. Chromios and Eurytos went with them. They felt sure they would kill the men and drive off those splendid horses. Poor fools, not without bloodshed would they depart company with Automedon. But Automedon commended himself to Father Zeus, and full of confidence he turned to his faithful friend. "Alcimedon," he said, "don't keep the horses too far from me. Let me feel their breath on my back. I believe Hector will stick at nothing until he has killed us both and got hold of these horses and routed our people, unless he is killed himself." Then he called the Eos pair and Menelaus. "Eos! You two, and Menelaus, leave the body to the best men you have, and let them see to the defense. But here are we two, alive. Help us and save us. Hector and Aeneas are on us with all their weight, and they are the most dangerous of the Trojans. Ah, well, all is on the knees of the gods. I will have a shot myself, and the Lord of Heaven shall decide." He cast his spear and hit the shield of Aretos. The blade went through the shield and through the belt and pierced his belly. Aretos gave a leap forward and fell on his back, as an ox leaps forward and falls when a strong man strikes with a sharp axe behind the horns and cuts the sinew. The sharp spear turned in his bowels, and he was still. Hector made a cast at Automedon, but Automedon was watching his eye and stooped forward. The spear flew over him and stuck in the ground behind, quivered, and was still. Then they would have fallen too with swords, but Aeus and the runner came to their comrade's call and parted the fighters. Their coming alarmed Hector and Aeneas and Chromios, who retired, leaving Aretos dead on the spot. Automedon quickly stripped off the armor and said triumphantly, "There now! I have eased my sorrow a little for my friend's death, although the man I killed is worth less." He took up the blood-stained spoils and put them in the car, then got in himself with blood all over feet and arms, like a lion that has gorged a bull. The strife round Patroclus now became more bitter and desperate than ever. Zeus had sent down Athena to encourage the Danians. He had changed his mind, no doubt. She wrapped herself in a lurid cloud, like the cloud about a rainbow which Zeus stretches across the sky to be a portent of war, or the chilly storm which drives men from their work upon the earth and distresses their flocks. Then she dashed among the Achaeans and pressed them on to the fight, one and all. She began with Menelaus, who happened to be near, and said in the shape and voice of Phoenix, "You, Menelaus, will certainly have shame and disgrace if the great friend of Achilles is worried by dogs under the walls of Troy. Stand firm, be brave, and keep the men at it." Menelaus said, "Oh, Daddy Phoenix, dear old ancient, let Athena give me strength and keep the shots away, and I would gladly stand firm and defend Patroclus, for his death has touched my heart indeed. But Hector is furious, is blazing fire. He kills and kills without ceasing, and Zeus gives him the victory." Athena Brighteyes was pleased that Menelaus had prayed to her first of all. She strengthened his back and knees and put in his inmost heart the courage of a fly. "Beat him off from your skin as often as you like, he goes on biting, and human blood is his dainty dish." So Menelaus was filled with the irrepressible audacity of a fly. He stood over the body and cast his spear. There was a man Podes among the Trojans, Eetion's son, a rich man and a brave man. Hector thought more of him than any man of the nation, for he was his comrade and boon companion. The spear struck this man on the belt as he started to escape. It pierced him and brought him down. Then Menelaus pulled the body among his people. Now Apollo did his part for Hector. He took the shape of Phenops Hesiades from Abydos, who was dearest of his guest friends. "Hector," he said, "what Achaean will ever fear you again, now you have run away from Menelaus, who used to be a flabby spearman? Now he has killed your true friend and good soldier Podes, and picked him up by himself, and dragged him from under your noses, and got away with him." This made Hector furious, and he pressed forward. At the same moment, Cronides turned the battle. Thick clouds covered Mount Ida. Lightning flashed and thunder rolled. The mountain quaked. Zeus took up his tasseled aegis cape, shining bright, and shook it at the Achaeans. They turned in panic flight, and the Trojans began to prevail. Boeotian Peneleus began the retreat. Moving slowly backwards, he had a shoulder grazed and cut to the bone by Polydamas, who was close upon him. Next, Hector struck Leotos, Alectryon's son, on the wrist and disabled him. Leotos made haste to escape, looking about him watchfully, for he knew he could not handle the spear now. Hector pursued, but Idomeneus hit him on the corselet over the breast. The spear broke at the socket, and the Trojans raised a shout. Idomeneus was now disarmed, and he would have been a dead man, for he had come on foot from the ships. But help was at hand, for Cyrenos of Lyctos in Crete had brought his master Meriones into the battle, and he kept the horses near while his master was fighting on foot as usual. Idomeneus got into this car, and as he stood there, Hector cast at him. He just missed him, but hit Cyrenos under the ear, cutting through the tongue and spilling his teeth. Cyrenos tumbled out, dropping the reins. But Meriones stooped and picked them up from the ground, saying, "Whip them up and away to the ships. You see yourself that we are losing now." So Idomeneus whipped them up and got away, and Cyrenus saved Idomeneus, but not his own life. Eos and Menelaus also saw that the victory was passing from them, and Eos said, "Damn it, any fool can see that Father Zeus is helping the other side. All their shots hit, whether a good man throws or a bad man. Zeus makes them all go straight, and all ours miss and stick in the ground. Well, we must look after ourselves. What is the best thing to do? We want to bring off this body and get back to our friends, too. They will be glad to see us. I think they are sorry enough if they look in this direction. They cannot expect us to keep off Hector the Invincible. He'll soon be upon our ships. I wish someone would go at once and tell Achilles. I don't believe he has even heard the bad news that his dear friend is dead. But I cannot see such a man anywhere. Men and horses are all swallowed up in this mist. Oh, Father Zeus, save the Achaeans out of this mist. Make the sky clear. Grant us to see with our eyes. Kill us in the light, since it is thy pleasure to kill us." The father pitied him as he prayed with tears in his eyes. In a moment he scattered the mist and the dust. The sun shone above. All the scene of the battle was disclosed. Then Eos said, "Look about now, my lord Menelaus, if you can see Antilochus alive still, and send him to tell Achilles that his dearest friend is dead." So Menelaus moved away, as a lion retreats from a farmyard, tired with fighting off dogs and men. He leapt in, greedy for meat, but got none, for they have been awake all night to save their fat cattle from his jaws, and he is met with showers of lances thrown by strong hands, and burning brands which terrify him. So when the dawn comes, he must depart disappointed. No less unwilling was Menelaus to leave Patroclus a prey to the Trojans, as he feared he would be, now all the army was in rout. Before he went, he said earnestly, "Be careful, you two, and Meriones. You are in charge here, and you must not forget the gentle Patroclus, poor fellow. He was kind and pleasant to all in his life, but now death and fate has found him." Then he moved away, glancing watchfully all round, like the eagle which is said to have keenest sight of all birds that fly in the heavens. High in the air he spies the quick-footed hare lying under a thick bush, stoops in a flash, and kills him. So Menelaus cast sharp glances around among the throng of men to see if he could spy the son of Nestor alive. Suddenly he saw him away to the left, rallying the men as well as he could, and he called out as soon as he was near enough, "Antilochus, this way, my good man. I have bad news for you, I am sorry to say. I think you can see already for yourself that God is rolling up trouble for us, and the Trojans have the best of it. But we have had a terrible loss. Patroclus is dead. Now then, run as quick as you can and tell Achilles. He may be able to save the body, but that is all. His armor is gone. Hector has it." Antilochus was shocked to hear the news. He was struck dumb, his eyes filled with tears, and his voice was choked. But he did what he was told, gave his arms to Laodocus, who was following him with the horses, and ran off at full speed. This left the Pylians without a leader. They were hard-pressed and looked for another, but Menelaus did not care to stay there and take the place of their leader. He put Thrasymedes in charge and ran back himself to defend the body of Patroclus. As soon as he reached Eos, he said, "I have just sent your man at full speed to tell Achilles, but I don't believe he will come just now. He may be furious against Hector, but he could not fight naked and bare. We must do what we can for ourselves and see if we can save the body and our own lives, too." Eos said, "Quite right, Menelaus. Be quick. You and Meriones, put your arms under the body and lift it. You carry it away, and we too will protect your rear against Hector and all the rest. We have one name and one heart, and we are well used to stand side by side and face the foe." So they hoisted the body with a great effort. The Trojans raised a yell when they saw them lifting the body and rushed at them like dogs that run before their masters upon a wounded boar. They run furiously until he turns on them in defiance. Then they scurry back all over the place. So the Trojans would come on in a body, stabbing at them with spears and swords. But whenever the doughty pair turned on them and stood, their color changed, and not one would dare to advance and show fight. In this way they carried the body to the ships, fighting as they went, while the battle spread round them like a wildfire which suddenly rises and spreads over a city, blown before the wind, until the houses fall in ruins amid the blaze. So, as they moved on, the ceaseless din of horses and fighting men rose all about them, and the two did their task like mules, putting forth all their dogged strength to drag a baulk or a ship's mast down a rocky path, worn out with sweat and weariness. Behind them the two namesakes held off the battle, as a woody ridge right across the plain holds a flood, holds the torrents of mighty rivers, and drives off their waters over the plain for all their impetuous force. But the Trojans pressed them hard, and especially too glorious Hector and Aeneas and Chalciades. The Achaeans fled before them with death shrieks and forgot how to fight, as daws or starlings fly in a cloud with death shrieks when they see a falcon who is certain death for small birds. Many a fine spear and shield was thrown away and left around and about the moat in the Danaan rout, for there was never a moment's peace. Book 18. How Achilles received the news, and how his mother got him new armor from Hephaestus. While the battle went on like blazing fire, Antilochus had been running at the top of his speed to Achilles. He found Achilles in front of the ships, anxious and thoughtful. He feared what had really happened, and he was saying to himself, "Oh, what can this mean? Here are our people again rushing in a rabble towards the camp. I fear the gods may bring bitter grief on me, as my mother told me once. She declared that the best man of the Myrmidons would be killed in battle while I yet lived. It must be the brave Menetiades who is dead. Headstrong man, I ordered him strictly to come back as soon as he had got rid of the fire and not to fight with Hector." As these thoughts were passing through his mind, there was Antilochus. When he was near enough, he told his cruel news, with tears running down his cheeks. "Bad news, my lord prince. I have very bad news for you, I am sorry to say. Patroclus is dead. They are fighting for his body. Only the body for the armor is lost. Hector has it." Sorrow fell on Achilles like a cloud. He swept up the dust with both hands and poured it over his head and smirched his handsome face till the black dirt stained his fragrant tunic. He tore his hair and fell flat in the dust, grand in his grandeur. The captive women also, whom he and Patroclus had taken, wailed in grief and ran out to where he lay, beating their breasts and half-fainting. Antilochus had taken the hands of Achilles and stood weeping beside him, while he moaned heavily, for he feared Achilles might put the steel to his own throat. His gracious mother heard his terrible cry, sitting by her old father deep down in the sea. She shrieked, and all the Nereid nymphs gathered about her in the deep sea. There came Glauce and Thalia and Simodice, Nisea and Speo, Thoe and round-eyed Hali, Simothue and Actia and Limnorea, Melite and Ira, Amphithoe and Agoe, Doto and Proto, Ferusa and Dynamine, Dexamine and Amphinome and Callionera, Doris and Panope and famous Galatea, Nemertes and Apsudes and Callionassa. There came Clymene and Ianera and Ianassa, Mera and Orethea and curly-headed Amathea, and all the other Nereids of the deep sea, all beat their breasts and wailed, as Thetis led off the lament, "Hear me, sister Nereids, and you all shall know the sorrow of my heart. Woe is me, unhappy mother of a noble son. I bore a lovely boy, perfect and strong, a hero above heroes. He ran up like a slim tree. I tended him like a choice plant in the garden. I let him go in the fleet to fight against Ilios, but I shall never have him back again. He will never return to his father's house. As long as he lives and sees the light of the sun, he has only sorrow, and I can do nothing to help him. But I must go and see my dear child, and hear what trouble has come to him so far from the battle." She left the cave, and her sisters went with her, weeping, through the water, until they came to the Trojan strand. There they stepped out upon the beach one after another, not far from the place where the Myrmidons had drawn up their ships, and Thetis sought her son. She found him groaning, and clasped his head with a sorrowful cry, saying simply, "My child, why do you weep? What is your trouble? Tell me, don't hide it. Zeus has done all that for you, all you besought him to do. The whole army has been brought to disaster for want of you, and huddled up under their ships." Achilles said with a deep groan, "Yes, my dear mother, the Olympian has done all that for me, but what good do I get of all that now if my dear friend Patroclus is dead? I cared more for him than all my companions, as much as for my own life. He is lost. My armor is Hector's. Hector killed him. Hector stripped off that miraculous armor, that beautiful armor, that wonder of wonders, which the gods gave to Peleus on the day when they laid you in a mortal's bed. I wish you had gone on living with your immortal sisters of the sea, and Peleus had married a mortal wife. But now, it was all to bring 1,000 sorrows on you, too, for your son's death. You will never have me back again. I shall never go home, for I have no desire myself to live and remain among men, unless I may kill Hector first with my own spear, and make him pay the death price for Patroclus' many Atyides."
Thetis answered, weeping, "You have not long to live, my child, if you say that. Quick after Hector, fate is ready for you."
Achilles burst out in anger, "Quick, let me die, since it seems my friend was killed, and I was not there to help him. He perished far from his native land, and I was not there to defend him. But now, since I am never to return home, since I brought no hope to Patroclus or my other comrades whom Hector killed, and how many they are, since I only sit idle beside the ships, a burden to the earth, although there is none like me in battle, as for debate, others are better there. Oh, that discord might utterly cease to be in heaven or earth, and anger that makes even the prudent man take offense, anger that is far sweeter than trickling honey and grows in men's hearts like smoke, just as I was made angry now by my lord King Agamemnon. But I will let bygones be bygones, although I am indignant. I will rule my temper because I must. Now I will go and find the destroyer of that dear life, Hector. Fate I will welcome whenever Zeus and all gods may choose to bring it. Not even the mighty Heracles escaped fate, and he was one that Lord Zeus Cronion loved best of all. Yes, fate brought him low, and the implacable anger of Hera. So with me, if a like fate has been ordained for me, there I shall lie when I am dead. But now may I win a glorious name. May they know that I have been long away from the battle. May I bring sobs and groaning to some wives of Troy and Dardania, and tears to their tender cheeks, which they shall wipe away with both hands. Don't try to keep me from the battle. You love me, I know, but you shall never persuade me."
Silverfoot Thetis answered, "Yes, indeed, my child, that is true. It is no bad thing to defend comrades in distress and danger of death. But your armor is in the enemy's hands. Hector is wearing that fine shining gear on his own shoulders. He is proud enough, yet I don't think he will have it long to boast of, for death is near him. But I do beseech you not to enter the battle until you see me here again. Tomorrow I will come back at sunrise with new armor from Hephaestus himself."
She turned from her son and said to her sisters as they went away, "Now you must return to our father's house and tell all to the old man of the sea. I am going to Olympus to ask Hephaestus, the master craftsman, if he will kindly make new armor for my son." And so they dived again into the sea, and Silverfoot Thetis set out for Olympus to fetch new armor for her dear boy. But all the while the Achaean rout went on, as Hector chased the fugitives with a terrible noise, until they came to their ships on the Hellespont. They could not get the body of Patroclus clear away, for Hector was on them again with horses and men like a consuming fire. 3 times Hector caught him by the legs to drag him away, calling on his men. 3 times the doughty pair were strong enough to beat him off. Now Hector would make a rush through the press, now he would stand and shout to his men, but never 1 step backward. Like shepherds who try to keep off a starving lion, the formidable pair could not scare him away from that body. Indeed, he would have dragged it away in triumph if Iris had not appeared. Hera sent her to Achilles without a word to Zeus or any other god. She gave her message clear and plain. "Up, Pelides! Show them your terrors! Go and help Patroclus. His body is the prize of this awful struggle. Trojans charging to drag him away to Troy, Danaans fighting to hold him, all killing each other. And Hector, most of all, he means to cut off his head and fix it upon the stakes. Up with you, don't lie there. You should be ashamed to let Trojan dogs tumble and tear Patroclus. Yours is the disgrace if the body is brought in, mangled and mutilated. Achilles answered, My dear goddess, who has sent you with this message?
Iris said, Hera sent me, our gracious queen herself.
Cronides knows nothing about it, nor any other god in Olympus.
Achilles answered, And how can I go into the mall? My armor is in the hands of those men, and my mother forbids me to arm until I shall see her again between my eyes. She has promised to bring me fine new armor from Hephaestus. I don't know any other that I could use, except the great shield of Aeus Telamoniades, but he is there in the front himself, I believe, using his spear to defend Patroclus.
Iris said, We know well enough that they hold your armor. But just go and show yourself at the moat, that the Trojans may be startled into quiet, and your people may have a breathing space. There's little time for breath in face of sudden death. Away went Iris at speed, and Achilles rose up. Over his broad shoulders Athena draped the tasseled aegis cape. Over his head she spread a golden haze. From his body shone a white-hot glow. We have seen a city on some island far away in the sea, besieged by enemies. All day long, as they fight, smoke rises to the sky. But when night falls, we see the beacons, one after another, signaling to the world for help, with fires blazing high. So the light rose from the head of Achilles, shining up to the sky as he stepped from the wall and stood beside the moat. He did not mingle with his people, for he remembered his mother's strict command. But there he stood and shouted, and from far away Pallas Athena lifted up her voice. Great was the confusion among the Trojans. The voice of Iasides sounded loud and clear, like the loud, clear voice of a trumpet when fierce enemies beleaguer a city all about. The Trojans heard the brazen voice of Iasides, and their hearts were filled with consternation. The horses turned away, foreboding evil to come. The charioteers were dumbfounded to see that bright and terrible light blazing above his head, the light which Athena had kindled. Thrice did Achilles shout aloud from the brink of the moat. Thrice were confounded the Trojans and all their host. There also perished 12 men of their best, speared upon their own chariots by their own spears. Then the Achaeans were glad indeed to draw back the body of Patroclus out of the turmoil and lay it upon a bier. His companions trooped around it, mourning. Achilles followed, weeping hot tears when he saw his faithful friend stretched on the bier and torn with cruel wounds. He had sent him forth to the war with chariots and horses, hoping to welcome a safe return. But what a return was this! The sun set unwearied, for Hera sent him, unwilling, down under the ocean stream, and the Achaeans at last had rest from their desperate struggle. When the Trojans, on their part, had left the field of battle and unyoked the horses, they gathered in conference before they thought of food. All stood as they held their debate. None could endure to sit, for all were dismayed now Achilles had shown himself after he had remained so long far from the battlefield. Polydamas, Panthous' son, was the first to speak, for he alone could look both before and behind. He was Hector's close friend. Both were born in one night, but one was first in debate, the other in battle. This man now addressed the assembly. "Look well about you, my friends," he said. "My advice is to retire now to the city, and not to spend this night in the plain before the enemy camp. We are a long way from our walls. So long as yon man was incensed against King Agamemnon, the Achaeans were easier to fight. I was glad myself to sleep near their ships, when I hoped we should take them. But now I am terribly afraid of Pelion. With his overbearing temper, he will never be content to stay in the middle plain where both sides share the battle. For him, the stake is our city and our women. Then let us retreat to the city. Listen to me, for this is what will happen. Just now the Blessed Knight has checked his pursuit, but if he finds us here tomorrow when he sallies forth armed, many a man shall know him well. Many a Trojan shall be gnawed by dogs and vultures, and he that escapes will be glad of a refuge in Ilios. I only pray that the tale may be far from my ears. If we do, as I say, with regret, I am sure, we will keep our forces assembled, and the city will be safe behind walls and lofty gates and high doors well barred. Tomorrow at dawn we will arm ourselves and take post along the walls. It will be the worse for him if he comes out and fights for our fortress. Back to the ships he will go when he has had enough of exercising the horses and careering round the city. That temper of his will not give him leave to assault it, and take it he never shall. Dogs shall devour him first.
Hector frowned at him, and said, I don't like what you say this time, Polydamas. Go back and huddle up in the city. Haven't you all enough of being cooped in behind walls? There was a time when the whole world talked of Priam's town, Troy, the great magazine of gold and bronze. But now all our homes are stripped of their treasures. Many have been sold and gone to Phrygia or Maeonia since Lord Zeus has been displeased. But now, you fool, do not publish those notions of yours any longer, just when the great god has granted me to win success before the enemy camp, and to crush up the Achaeans against the sea. Not a Trojan will listen to you. I will not allow it. Come now, all, do as I shall tell you. First, let us take a good meal in our divisions. See after the watch. Keep awake, every man. If any Trojan is worried overmuch about his goods, let him collect them and distribute them to be mob-gobbled. It is better the people should enjoy them than our enemies. Tomorrow at dawn we will arm ourselves and make a great attack on the ships. If Achilles has really risen up by the ships, it shall be all the worse for him, just as he likes. I, at least, will never turn my back on battle. I will stand up to meet him, to win or lose it all. The god of war will see fair play. He's often slain that wants to slay. The Trojans cheered this speech in their folly, for Pallas Athena stole their sense away. Hector's advice was bad, and they praised him. Polydamas offered good counsel, and no one praised him. Then they took their meal where they were. But the Achaeans mourned Patroclus all night long. Achilles led their lamentations, sobbing and depressing on his friend's breast those hands which had slain so many, groaning like a lion when some hunter has robbed him of his cubs, and he has come back too late. How he scours the glades in search of the robber's track, and hopes to find him with bitter bile in his heart. So Achilles cried aloud to his Myrmidons, What a fool I was! What empty words I said on that day when I tried to comfort the noble Menoetius in my home! I said I would bring his son back to Opoeus, covered with glory, victor over Troy, laden with spoil. But Zeus does not fulfill all the designs of men. Both of us are destined to make the same earth red here in Troy, for I shall never return to be welcomed by ancient Peleus in our home, or by Thetis, my mother, but earth shall cover me in this place. But now, Patroclus, since you have gone down into the grave before me, and I am left, I will not give you burial until I shall bring here Hector's arms, and the head of Hector who killed you. Then before your pyre I will cut the throats of 12 noble sons of Troy in payment for your death. Till then you shall lie as you are beside our ships, and round about you shall weep in lamentation night and day Trojan and Dardanian women, whom we have gotten by our strength and by our long spears in sacking many a rich town. Then he directed that a large tripod should be set over the fire to wash the blood from his friend's body. They set the tripod accordingly with a cauldron, and filled it with water, and kindled the wood beneath. The flames curled about the cauldron, and when the water boiled, they washed him, and rubbed him with oil, and filled the wounds with 9-year-old unguent. Then they laid him on a bier, wrapped in fine white linen from head to foot, with a white sheet spread over him. All night long Achilles and the Myrmidons mourned for Patroclus.
Meanwhile, the gods in heaven were talking about it. Zeus said to his queen, "So you have had your way after all, my queen. You need not open your fine eyes like that. You have got Achilles up on his quick feet. One would think those bushy-headed Achaeans were your own children."
Queen Hera replied, "What a thing to say, Cronides. You shock me. I suppose even a mere man will do what he can for a man, even a mortal who has not my experience of life. I am chief of all goddesses on two counts, because I am eldest, and because I have the honor of being your wife, and you are king of heaven. Ought not I to damage the Trojans when I hate them?"
By this time, Silverfoot Thetis had come to the house of Hephaestus, that brazen, starry house, incorruptible, preeminent among the immortals, which old Crookshank himself had made. She found him in a sweat, running about among his bellows, very busy, for he had 20 tripods to make, which were to stand round by the wall of his room. He put golden wheels under the base of each, that they might run of themselves into any party of the gods, and then run back home again. They were a miracle. They were nearly done, only the lugs had to be put on. He was just finishing these and forging the rivets. While the clever creature was making these, Thetis came up.
Charis saw her and ran out at once with her veil flying, pretty Charis, whom the famous Crookshank had made his wife. She clasped the visitor's hand and cried out, "My dear Thetis, what brings you to our humble home in all this finery? This is an honor. I am glad to see you, dear. You don't often come this way. Come in, do, and have something to eat."
She led Thetis in and made her sit on a chair covered with silver studs, beautifully carved and inlaid, and set a footstool for her feet. Then she called to Hephaestus,
"Husband, come in here. Thetis wants you."
The good old hobbler answered, "Then there's a goddess in our house whom I respect and love. She saved my life when I was laid up after that bad fall I had. All my mother's doing, shameless thing, when she wanted to hide me away because I'm lame. I should have had a bad time of it, then, if your enemy and Thetis had not taken me to their hearts. You know your enemy, the daughter of Ebb and Flow Oceanus. I stayed with them 9 years, and I made them no end of lovely things. Brooches, twisted spirals, rosettes, necklaces, all in a hollow cave, and Oceanus rolling ever round and round, foaming and roaring. Not a soul knew where I was, neither god nor mortal man, only Thetis and your enemy, who saved me. And now here she is in our house. I am bound to do anything for Thetis, pretty dear. Pretty hair. I have to pay for my life. You just give her something nice to eat and drink while I put away my bellows and tools."
The old Nunsuch got up from his anvil, puffing and blowing, and limped about on his nimble thin shanks. The bellows he laid away from the fire and collected all his working tools in a hutch of silver. Then he wiped a sponge over his face and both arms and sturdy neck and hairy chest and put on his tunic and limped out, leaning on a thick stick with a couple of maids to support him. These were made of gold, exactly like living girls. They have sense in their heads. They can speak and use their muscles. They can spin and weave and do their work by grace of God. These bustled along, supporting their master, and he stumbled to a chair beside Thetis, saying,
"My dear Thetis, in all your finery, what brings you to our humble home? This is an honor, and I am glad to see you, my dear. You don't often pay us a visit. Tell me what you want. I shall be pleased to do it, if it is doable, and if I can do it."
Thetis answered with tears running down her cheeks, "My dear Hephaestus, is there any goddess in Olympus who has troubles to bear like mine? Zeus Cronides has chosen me out of all to make me miserable. Out of all the daughters of the sea, he gave me to a man, to Peleus Iasides, and I had to endure a man's bed against my will. The man lies in his house, worn out with the burden of old age, and now there is more for me. He gave me a son to bear and bring up, a hero of heroes. He ran up like a slim tree. I tended him like a rare plant in my garden. I let him go with the fleet to Ilios for the war. But I shall never get him back. He will never come home to his father's house. As long as he lives and sees the light of the sun, he has trouble, and I cannot go to help him.
There was a girl the army chose for him as a prize. She was taken away from him by my lord Agamemnon. There he was, pining away in grief for the girl. Then the Trojans drove the Achaeans back upon their ships and cooped them up there, would not let them get out. The people sent envoys to him with a petition, and promised heaps of fine gifts. He refused to help in the battle himself, but he sent Patroclus in his own armor and strong forces with him. All day long they fought at the Scaean gates, and he would have taken the city then and there. But Apollo killed Patroclus on the field after many great exploits, though Hector had the credit. So now I come to your knees with my prayer for my son, doomed to die so soon. Will you give him a spear and helmet, and a good pair of greaves with ankle guards, and a corset?